welcome to Dear Hank and John.
Or as I like to call it, Dear Sam and Hank.
It's a podcast where two brothers, and sometimes a brother and a friend, give you dubious advice, bring you all the week's news from Mars and AFC Wimbledon, and also something else that I've forgotten. Sam, what does Batman call his grandmother when he needs something?
Oh, I couldn't possibly tell you, Hank, but something tells me this isn't a rhetorical question, that you have the answer.
Yeah, he says, nana, 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 nana. Like that.
That's funnier than I thought it was going to be.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I thought it was not good. So if you liked that one, tune into other episodes of Dear Hank and John, where they're even worse.
And that's our show.
Yeah. So if anybody knows who this man is, this is Sam Reich. He is the host of Game Changer and also a creator executive like me over at College Humor and Dropout TV. Where they do really so many wonderful, amazing things that I love to consume and enjoy.
Oh, thank you so much, Hank. Your fandom is truly humbling and intimidating. Every time you put something out into the world that says we're great, I'm like, well, there raiseth the bar.
Well, you keep raising your own bar, which seems like a lot. Do you worry about raising your own bar so high that the bar, that you cannot get over it?
I do. Yes, we are pole vaulters here.
Yeah.
And
it's fun.
What I like to say is with every season of Game Changer, I ask myself, how are we going to top this next season? And then every season I tell myself, that's next season's problem.
Yeah, that's right. And then you do it, at least so far.
So far. You just wait.
Yeah. When I first started watching Game Changer, you said to me, don't watch the beginning. And that was totally wrong. Those episodes are so good, too. So what you need to know. One of the great things about being a Vlogbrother is that you make a video every single week. And so you know that you're not going to get better every time. Like there's going to be some weeks where it's just like, all right, I'm not totally committed to this idea. I don't.
Yeah.
But we're going to.
That's a part of it.
We're going to do what we can with this one.
Yes.
This week.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that's a part of it. I mean, for me, that's a part of it. And then what you have to decide is the goal isn't necessarily to strike gold every time. The goal is to create a good album. You have to look at it like the musicians do and say, well, over the course you know, 10, I'm going to keep the bar, bar high.
Very high. You got to have a hit in there.
Yeah, you want a hit, but you can't like strive for a hit that's like, you know, looking directly at a star. You need to look somewhere adjacent to the star.
Ah, you're striving for hits. You don't think Taylor Swift sits down and is like, well, you know, starts to like feel one and be like, I think this is it. I think this is the one. I think this
I
is
don't
the
know. If you'd managed to get her on the podcast, we could have asked her.
It's true. I did actually say that, didn't I? That I had offered Taylor Swift your time slot, but she hadn't taken it up.
He said, if Taylor Swift opts in, I'm going to bump you. And I went, honestly, if Taylor Swift shows up, bump me forever. Like, just like, you know.
You can do anything. You can't do anything else if Taylor Swift is going to show up. That's the rules. That's the rules of 2023. Or else you'll lose your whole audience. Like, they will also won't forgive you.
Oh, for sure. Taylor Swift could successfully sub in for me in any moment of my life and do better than I would.
That
she
would
could stand in for me at the DMV and just knock it out of the park.
I bet she's a delight at the DMV.
I'm sure she is. I'm sure she
was back when she did that. Does California have a special thing for celebrities to go to the DMV?
This is a fantastic question.
Yeah.
Do celebrities have to go to the DMV?
So is there like a special DMV?
Right.
I feel like there's a way. I feel like somebody does it for her. It's got to be.
Yeah. Like there's a VIP section somewhere in the back.
Yeah. DMV Fast Pass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want now. That's like a hot
ticket. Have that in Missoula. You can schedule ahead of time so you don't have to wait once you're there.
Really?
It's just like a Fast Pass.
Yeah. Huh. Look at that.
Sometimes it doesn't work, but sometimes it does. What's good to submit questions from our listeners? Do you want to do some of those?
Sure.
Okay, this first one comes from Michael, who asks, "Dear Hank and Sam, I recently moved to a busier road and discovered that people honk their car horns in my neighborhood a lot more than I previously realized. That made me think, should we have a secondary, quieter horn installed on all cars for non-emergencies, like just get off your phone at this green light, please? You can take out any of the targets except for that one." That's Michael. What?
What a
you can take out any of the targets except for that one. That's Michael. I don't get it. My goal?
You can take out any of the targets. Now I feel like I'm unraveling poetry that I read in middle school.
Yeah. I think maybe it's my goal. That's my goal.
Oh, that's my goal. Oh, maybe. That's very astute, Hank.
Michael's definitely created some work for us. This is not the first time that the secondary car horn has been proposed on a podcast.
Is that a fact on this podcast?
That's my guess. In fact, I'm pretty sure I've listened to some McElroy content about the secondary car horn.
Well, the answer to the question is clearly yes. I happen to know. Mm-hmm. Anecdotally, that in Japan, they turn off and on their hazard lights as a way of saying thank you.
Oh.
Which I always thought was tremendous.
It's a big reach to do that. I don't know exactly. Yeah. I'm always looking when I need to turn the hazards on. I'm like, where the heck is this thing?
Yeah, for sure. Well, because we're not in the habit of using them. But I always thought that was a clever use of existing infrastructure.
Yeah.
You know, because it doesn't require that we modify anything except our behavior.
Well, yeah. Yeah. And it's a thank you. And that's not going to get somebody's attention at the stoplight, but it is going to achieve a goal.
Yeah. And I don't know about you, but positive car etiquette.
Yeah.
Means the world. Like if I live on a very narrow street and I have to dodge cars coming my direction all the time.
Yeah.
And if I get a little thank you hand.
Yeah, yeah.
It just makes my day. Yeah. But if I don't, my blood boils.
That's the end. I'm telling Taylor Swift about you.
She'll revoke my driver's license. She's got ins.
I was in an Uber recently, and he had one of these. This is why I wanted to ask this question. It's because he had a little device that had six buttons on it. And when we were stopped at a stoplight and nobody was going, he pushed a button and it made a noise that was not a car horn. And it was just a loud fart sound. It wasn't. It was like frink. It was like a little honk.
Whoa. But you only know what one of those six buttons.
Yeah,
did,
there's five other buttons at least.
Big mystery.
Yeah, I should have said, "Hey, buddy, I want you to push that other. I want you to push all those buttons.
Show me what your buttons do." I do really like the idea of a programmable car horn because I think I'd love the opportunity to make it say human words.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Like how many times have you been driving? It would just be convenient to be able to say, "Hey," I guess that's a beep.
Yeah.
That's what that is.
Or yeah, I guess. Thanks. Thanks with the lights is very good. I used to drive a Honda Civic, which occurs to me is a Japanese car. And the hazard lights was a very big button over the radio display, over the stereo display. So maybe that's why. Maybe that's why it's so easy to get to.
I do it. If someone allows me to merge, I do, because I was so enchanted by this idea.
Yeah.
Turn off and on my hazards briefly. You're trying to make it happen. But I have no idea if this is registering with anybody.
We have a thing like this in Montana. I don't know if people have this other places, but it's something that I can tell a number of people are trying to make happen, but it hasn't quite happened yet. Mm-hmm. Which is that there's a tunnel in town that goes underneath the railroad tracks.
Yeah.
And when you go in that tunnel, people honk sometimes, rarely. Huh. And I honk every time because I'm like, any time that we're going to do something together as a town, I'm like, yes. Or as a species, whatever. As Americans, I don't know if this is like a like more people do this, but I get in that tunnel. I'm like, honk, honk. And if anybody else honks, it just makes my day. Or if I hear somebody honk first, then I'm like, ah, this is us.
This is
us being humans. Yeah. Look at us.
Yeah.
Feels good.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's just tribal mentality right there. That's dancing around the hearth. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I want to do something with a stranger. Something very simple and easy.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Something nice. That's not the DMV.
Yeah. I mean, I guess so to rewind for a moment, the question would be, Hank, if you had five car horns or six as the case may be, what would you do with five car horns? What would you
So like one of them's got to be sort of like a like low key. Can I pet your dog? That's got to be on there.
I like that. That's number one.
Yeah, that's number two. After a like, meep, just like the little honk.
Sure.
So the little sometimes one you want to go. You go for a little honk and you get a bigger one than you intended.
Oh, all the time.
Yeah. So I want a little, like a definite little honk. And then number three. It would be apology, and it would be Taylor Swift saying, "It's me. Hi, I'm the problem. It's me." That's the third one.
That's fantastic.
Fourth one is just a dog barking, and that's for when somebody's coming up to your car, and you know, would rather them not be there.
For sure, it's a way to say there's a big dog in here.
There's a big dog in here. The fifth is a narwhal barking, which you don't know what that sounds like, but it's very cool.
Oh yeah.
Narwhal bark.
And that one's there just for the novelty of it.
Yeah, you want to have that sometimes.
Yeah, you just want to be able to show off to friends some strange sounds.
Yeah, and then that last one's just going to be the sound of falling rain on a summer day.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah,
that's for the rare moments where you want to sleep in your car and you need some good.
I just want everybody around me to fall asleep because that's what you want when you're driving.
100%. 100%. Great answer to my question.
Thanks. What does your seventh do?
My seventh goes, hey. I think.
Hey. Well, Sam.
I think the one that you very in character left out is the angry car horn. And the question is, what would that sound like in a world in which it were evolved?
What do you mean? I think the horn is doing its job.
Well, you gave us six horns, and the first one was a polite meep.
Yeah, but I still got the main horn.
I don't know if you did. What I'm saying is I think there's an evolution of the angry car horn.
We need better.
It just goes, you hurt my feelings.
Yeah, that's good.
You know,
I think everybody needs to know that we're all fragile. We're all human. All just trying to make it through the world.
Yeah.
And this, it might look like just like a big ball of steel, but there's a little soft man in here, and he gets hurt feelings too.
That's right. By taking ownership over your feelings, you're immediately diffusing the situation.
Do you want to ask another question for us?
Oh, sure.
I'm done with this.
This question comes from anonymous Dear Hank and Sam. Why is it that humans are the only animal that need to use toilet paper? Huh. My dog doesn't. The cat doesn't. I don't see any other animals needing to wipe their butts. It's the food we eat, right?
Well, certainly not. It could be in part the food we eat. But sometimes a dog needs to wipe their butt. Like sometimes a dog gets into something and then there's a whole situation back there.
If you've owned a dog, and particularly like me, if you've owned a long-haired dog, you know just how, not to say that there are any wrong questions, but this is an uninformed question.
Yeah. I mean, out in the woods, you know, like you aren't going to have that service, but I will say cats and dogs and many other mammals clean their butts. They just do it in a way that you cannot physically do or wouldn't want to.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's
I do also, and correct me if I'm wrong, Hank. I mean, we as humans, we walk upright.
Yeah, and this is totally a thing.
Because we walk upright. Well, I don't know, you know, which is the chicken and the egg here, but we have big butts.
We do.
That allow us.
That's because we walk upright. Yeah.
to ascend into the sky, these large butt muscles.
Uh-huh.
And I think what that means is that we, unlike a dog or a cat, are going to chafe more.
Oh, that's true.
Because of our weakness.
Because you want it to be clean position. In there, because otherwise there's stuff in there and it's getting rubbed around.
Yeah.
And that's no good. Yeah. That is a good point. But also, there's an additional detail here, which is simply that, according to a quote from a scientist that I'm going to read to you right now, because of our vertical posture, the area used for releasing urine and feces is compressed between the thighs and buttocks. So we are more likely than other animals to foul ourselves.
Wow. It's just a miracle of evolution that we're the dominant species, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, is this one of the sort of filter points where you can't like evolve upright posture and free up your hands unless and until you're smart enough to use wiping instruments?
That sounds right. God forbid that animals learn to wipe, or it's all uphill for them from there and downhill for us.
Yeah. Yeah, downhill for us, uphill for them, but also downhill for them, because this is hard.
For sure.
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure to be a human. Wildly inconvenient. It seems like my cat just licking its is doing fine.
Yes, for sure. It's sad and silly that being a human being involves so many use of different products.
Yeah,
like we need these products to support us.
It's true. Well, and also we want them. So some of them we need, and some of them we want. There was also an additional thought in this article that was simply, we are just a little less happy being disgusting.
Yeah, that is true.
And like a dog with a bunch of dingleberries sticking off its butt is not concerned about that.
And I can attest to that. both as far as my dog and my cat is concerned. In fact, to try to get dingleberries off my cat, you would think my cat wants them there.
I've actually had my cat come up to me and like complain.
Really?
And I'm like, what's wrong with you? You never do this. And I'm like, oh, you got a whole piece of poop yanking on your butt hairs. That he doesn't like it. I don't like that.
Yeah.
I feel like we learned a lot just now about each other, about our world.
Yes.
I'm going to ask you another question. This one is from Leah, who asks, dear Hank and Sam, if cowboys say howdy to say hello, how do they say goodbye? Insert your chosen cowboy farewell here, Leah.
This is a fantastic question. I promise I didn't intend for this to be self-promotional. There is a season of our D&D actual play show in which I play a cowboy, or to be more specific, a pig or javelina cowboy. Uh-huh. And in research for that character, I did do a lot of sort of studying cowboy isms. I think there's a few different answers to this question.
Yeah. Well, I live in a place where people say howdy, which people don't realize is a thing sometimes. Like, I say howdy because I've lived here for so long.
And do you really?
I do. And it's not
that. Do people say y'all?
People say y'all some.
Okay.
But like Montanans say howdy. And it's like totally normal and you don't notice it anymore.
Wow.
And I went to Australia and I said howdy to somebody and they looked at me and I was like, and they were like, you actually do that in America?
They looked at you like you were wearing a 10-gallon hat.
Yeah.
Stirrups and carrying
like,
a whip.
That was so charming.
And
I was like,
sweet.
And at the same time, you say good day. Like it happens all the time when you're over there. People say good day. And you're like, all right. G'day, mate.
Yes,
you're like,
we're doing it.
We're being our stereotypical selves. Howdy.
Yeah.
G'day.
There's something about g'day, mate, in an American accent, which just falls flat.
Yeah. It does. Yeah. But howdy sounds awful nice. But do you have any cowboy goodbyes? Because I don't know what we say here. Same thing as everybody else, mostly.
I think, and I will do this in dialect.
Okay.
I think that the realistic answers to this question are probably adios, amigo, so long. But there's also some fun cowboyisms.
It's so long. So long is good. I wouldn't normally say so long. But it's better if you say so long, partner, right? So long.
For partner. Sure. For sure.
Yeah.
So long, partner. There's also some fun isms such as time to hit the dusty trail.
Great. Sam Elliott. Good to have you on the podcast.
Taylor Swift was a no, but Sam Elliott was a yes. Don't let the door hit you where the good Lord split you.
Oh, wow. So that's more like you leave, not I'm leaving.
That's true. That's true.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I believe there's also one about let's put the chairs in the wagon.
So this is causing me, that's great. Let's put the chairs in the, this is causing me a thought, which is I've watched Dimension 20 a fair amount. How much prep do people like? Do you just got like a list of things you're gonna say? Or is it also, are you scripting it out?
You know, there was this really funny momentary TikTok controversy where people were talking about both Dimension 20 and Critical Role as being scripted, I thought was really funny because, in the words of Zach Oyama, one of our cast members. That's right. We script 20 hours of content and then we just nail it.
Outlines. Are you like, maybe you got an idea? I mean, I think that anybody who plays Dungeons and Dragons maybe sits around at night looking at the ceiling, thinking of a monologue they might go on as their character.
I'll be honest and say that for Buxter $ Boyd in Mice and Murder, I had a list of cowboyisms pulled up in case I needed to use them.
Yeah.
Like I had there's this wonderful quote, never grapple with a pig. You'll both get dirty, but the pig likes it.
Yeah.
And I wrote that down in advance of the season. I was like, I would love to use that somewhere. And it wasn't until like the final scene that I found the opportunity.
Wow. That's great.
Opportunity for it.
That's great. I have a version of that saying that I came up with because of my job, which is that it's not fun at all. It's just, I think, true.
Yeah.
But you can't argue with a professional arguer without becoming a professional arguer.
Ooh.
And being a professional arguer is like the worst job.
Ooh,
yeah.
Cold. Hey, yeah. You've got some great quotes coming out of that.
Yeah,
mouth hole yours.
Yeah, I think that one was in the first book, but I realized it after I got into an argument with a professional arguer whose job was to get into arguments so that he could make content around the arguments, and getting sucked into that was so easy because like he knows exactly what he was doing.
For sure.
Like, yeah.
I think I see that on social media sometimes. I see people who sort of, in an effort to create content, they are deliberately fanning the flames of heated discourse. And what I realize is that by engaging with them, I'm just creating content for them.
Yes. Yeah. And it's very hard to realize that before it happens. But once it happens.
Sometimes
people are like, yes, I will also be a professional arguer. And I don't think that's the right decision to make.
Yeah. Do you see an alternate universe for yourself in which you became more of an arguer? Do you think there's a world in which...
There's a piece of me that likes it. But it's not. I don't know.
Because critical thinking...
I think that I might not be temperamentally set up for it.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's stressful.
For sure. For sure.
And I see a lot of people who have my job sort of like who do science communication. They like sign up to debate things in halls. And I'm like, never.
You already do something that on the internet can be considered a high wire act, which is you make points. Like,
yeah, making points is tricky. Yeah. And sometimes that's the space I occupy that I could see myself getting more into that business.
Yeah.
But I have realized, and I don't know if it's like age or my family, I've realized that I do not want to be going deep on that. And usually I will make a point and one or two things will happen. I will either never touch it again or I will realize that there was something bad about the point and I will delete it.
I have a friend who deletes tweets liberally. Like, often I'll see a tweet and then it will be gone within 2 minutes. And to look at his Twitter timeline,
I have a brother like that.
Yeah, is and I honestly I think that's correct.
Yeah,
I think that is a correct.
These things don't need to be forever. We're not Benjamin Franklin.
No,
these aren't going to be aphorisms. These are tweets.
Yeah, if Benjamin Franklin had an edit button, he would have used it all the time.
So long, partner. In Montana, we just say "see you later" mostly.
See you later. Yeah.
Later.
Yeah.
Yep, I think that's pretty much it.
Yeah. In a wild crocodile.
Thanks. Ta-ta for now, we say. Ta-ta for now. No.
Ta-ta is fantastic. And I believe the Brits also say ta.
Ta.
Singular.
Yeah, they do say ta. I've been ta'd.
Love the ta.
Yeah.
It's so efficient.
Which reminds me, actually, that this podcast is brought to you by Being Todd. Being Todd. It's how you know that you're in the great country of the United Kingdom, or whatever it is.
And this episode is also brought to you by Gentle Rain Sounds. Gentle Rain Sounds that will lure the entire lane you're in to sleep.
This podcast is also brought to you by the Taylor Swift DMV. It's a special DMV just for Taylor Swift. Very little's known about it, but if you're friends, occasionally you can get an appointment.
This episode is also brought to you by a cat's dingleberry. A cat's dingleberry. Remove at your own risk.
Indeed. We also have a Project for Awesome message. This is from Julie to Simon. Simon, happy 14th birthday. I love that you love Hank and John. Reading, rock climbing, adventuring, and traveling the world. You're pretty amazing. As you head into high school and into the person you are becoming, don't forget to be awesome. And if you ever do forget, I'll be here to remind you just how awesome you are. Now go Charizard this mofo. Love, Auntie Julie. That's cute.
I love the Pokemon reference right at the end there.
Yeah, that's an old joke.
Well, still got me. Still.
One thing about me is that I'm mortal, like I'm an organism, which is weird on its own. Like I'm a collection of literal atoms that decided to hang out together for a while and which will eventually be unable to hang out together any longer. And then I will, this is the weirdest part, cease to be. And there's nothing that can be done about that because like planets and stars also cease to be. It's a real conundrum and I'm not going to find my way through it in this advertisement, but we can make life less terrible for those who survive us. And that's why there's life insurance. I have life insurance because the people who are counting on me will be supported after my atoms can no longer hold it together, and Policy Genius is here to make life insurance easier. Policy Genius isn't an insurance company, it's a marketplace where buying insurance is straightforward and affordable. With Policy Genius, you can find life insurance policies that start at just $292 per year for $1 million of coverage. Some options offer same-day approval and avoid unnecessary medical exams, so check life insurance off your to-do list in no time with Policy Genius. Head to policygenius.com or click the link in the description to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you could save. That's policygenius.com. So we all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but one thing you don't want to compromise on is your health. When it comes to your health, there should be no compromising. So don't go back to that one doctor who uses your appointment to catch up on the latest headlines or their family group chat or the crossword puzzle just because they're available right now or take your slightly sketchy insurance. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, listen to you, and prioritize your health. You can search by location, availability, and insurance. So literally no compromises here because with ZocDoc, you've got more options than you know. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. So go to ZocDoc.com/DearHank and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/DearHank. ZocDoc.com/DearHank.
This next question comes from Tyler, who asks, "Dear Hank and Sam, in what year do you think the first murder in space will be done?"
Wow.
That's great. All the best, Tyler. When's Space Murder going to start?
This is the Black Mirror portion of the podcast.
Yeah, I feel like there's not been Space Murder so far. Like, I think they couldn't have covered that up.
I don't know, Hank. Very convenient spot to put the body.
Yeah, but people notice if it doesn't come back, right?
I think what you're saying is people notice if people in space go missing. Yeah. And you're probably correct. There's probably a low enough tally.
Yeah. That it's like, has anybody seen Jeff today? It's weird because it's not a big space station.
Yeah.
It's really just four rooms. And I feel like I would have seen him.
And his role was pivotal on board the spaceship.
Yeah, necessary.
It's everyone's is.
His day is tightly scheduled by a large team of professionals.
It's not as if we've got a lot of understudies up here.
Do you think he slept in?
I'm going to say that if a murder is going to happen in space, it's going to be on board a generation ship.
Ooh, yeah. I mean, if you have a generation ship, it will definitely be a murder. I mean, can you explain what a generation ship is to people?
Absolutely. So I believe a generation ship is a science fiction concept.
Yeah.
And the idea is that one day we will have to venture out from Earth to other planets. Mm-hmm. And when we do, it will take us so long to get there that an entire generation will be born and die on board a ship.
One. Yeah.
At least one, if not several. And that just feels like a recipe for resentment to me.
Yeah, well, see, you can make that decision for yourself, but you can't really make it for your grandkids. And they're like, I would have rather lived on a planet, not in this box.
For sure. I would rather that my entire existence wasn't merely about the proliferation of my species.
Right. And you're not even going to necessarily, like, you could live your whole life on the ship. Like, you might not be the one to arrive or the one to leave.
That's right.
That's a bummer. That's a bummer.
That's a big bummer. And
I also think anytime you put a bunch of, like, if you're putting even, I don't know, 100 people on a ship for the rest of their lives, there's going to be some bad vibes between some of them.
Yeah. What we're talking about here is bad vibes.
I'm actually writing a book right now about the first space murder. So this is weird that you asked this question.
No kidding. Are you really?
Yeah. And novel ground. It is novel ground. But there have been books about the first space murders before.
Are you actually writing this book or is that a joke?
No,
you're actually writing.
Yeah. I'm like, 15,000 words in. The murder has occurred. The first murder.
Is it called A Beautifully Foolish Space Murder?
No. I don't have a name. Well, I do have a name.
Absolutely Remarkable Space Murder.
I have a work in progress name that I'm not sharing. I like it though. I'm sure my editor will make me change it, but it's great.
are the words space or murder in the title?
No.
Seems like a missed opportunity.
It's true. Maybe I should put space murder. It's just called space murder. I feel like that would put an idea in your head that is not really what the book is about.
For sure.
Which is mostly it is about a bunch of people who are not from the space station being like, holy shit, these people are weird.
Yeah, that's
like the detective who gets hauled up from Earth to solve the space murder being like, you guys gotta touch grass.
Yeah, for sure. Solving a space murder also feels to me like a really convenient ground for a detective.
Yeah, a little Orient Express vibe.
Oh, yeah. I mean, talk about like a bottle episode of something, you know? It's like, this is actually a terrific pitch for a television show. They should do a sort of like a NCIS or... CI or SVU or one of those other acronyms.
Yeah. The S in NCIS actually stands for space. And so does the S in CSI. And and SVU also space victims unit.
I mean, it could. And therein lies the pitch. I think I've talked myself into, well, you know what? This is much more
efficient.
I'll write
the book and then you can option it.
Perfect.
Because I'm going to be done with it in like 3 or 4 years.
Hank's Space Murder, HSM.
Good thing that my initials aren't BD. Because then that would be fun, though.
Uh-huh, yeah.
I thought about having my An Absolutely Remarkable Thing. The people who like that book a lot, they created a Discord called Fans of An Absolutely Remarkable Thing, and it's called Fart.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's really great. Yeah, it's really worth doing just for the acronym.
They know the path to my heart, for sure.
Yeah. Sometimes when you have the opportunity at a good acronym, it just helps tie a bow on something that you otherwise wouldn't do. And then you're like, well, the acronym's too good. Now we got it.
Or you could be like everyone in science and just make up an amazing acronym through just truly just will and nothing else.
Yes, for sure. It's funny. I don't use ChatGPT for that much. Whenever I've given it a creative assignment, I've been terribly disappointed. But one thing it's very good at is creating acronyms. Give it the acronym you want and a topic.
Yeah.
And it'll just go ham.
Bam. Now we don't need Will anymore.
That's right.
Will is just ChatGPT's name. His name is William.
That's right.
I have a question that I want to ask you specifically. I can't believe that Bex gets to ask you this question specifically as a game show master. It says the show Taskmaster, it's a different show, but you are also a game master, has been the most reliable source of joy in my life since I discovered it about a year ago. It is so good. I am a fan of it.
It is the best.
It's so good. Since you're a fan, Hank, I'm hoping that you can help me plan a Taskmaster-themed party for my 30th birthday. I have so many questions. Should I be Greg? Should I be Alex? Would I have more fun if I get to compete? Oh, man, there's fertile ground. This is fertile ground. You have 10 minutes. Your time starts now. Simply the Bex. Oh, Bex. Oh,
what
Bex.
A great question, Bex.
So there's that. The place I'm starting is the games that happen at the end when they're all in the same room together on stage. Because those are more things that you can do.
Yes.
But before we start this, we should say, should Bex be Alex or Greg?
You know, that's a really interesting...
The Taskmaster or the Taskmaster's assistant.
It's a really interesting question. I think that, like, obviously Greg has more the master of ceremonies vibe. That looks like the more fun job. You know, Alex's job is almost like admin. I mean, that's how they cast
him. It's all the work. Yeah.
It's all the work. It is, by the way, and I want to start by saying I'm the biggest Taskmaster fan. I absolutely love the show. I started watching it when Game Changer fans were like, you should watch this other cousin show of yours. Mm-hmm. And started watching it out of a sense of, I want to make sure I'm not ripping anyone off accidentally. And have now, you know, avoided certain Game Changer ideas because I worry they're too similar to Taskmaster ideas. It's funny because the Taskmaster intro, which is Greg Davis at a typewriter typing tasks, but he doesn't actually write the show.
He doesn't do that. Yeah, that's the best gig. I mean, it sounds like, Bex, that you want to do some work here, though. But it could be that you could just pretend like Greg does the work, because that's clearly what the show is doing. The show is pretending he does the work and do the work.
Yes.
And then still be the taskmaster. I think you want to be the taskmaster of your own birthday party.
I think so, too. Yeah. I think, you know, you probably want an amalgam role that's sort of equal parts.
Yeah.
You know, host and taskmaster or Greg and Alex.
Yeah. And if you can dress up a small dog like Alex, that would be great.
It's perfect. Yes. I mean, this is speaking as someone who is a host and gets great pleasure out of hosting and, providing experiences for people, that I think that is an even greater pleasure than playing the game, because to play the game is to be a mortal, but to run it is to play God.
And that's what you want on your birthday.
Who doesn't want to be God on their birthday?
Now, the Taskmaster does have a little book that they publish, so you can just like get a book and look at a bunch of tasks that they have. They have there that I think are things that they haven't done on the show.
There's a book. There's a board game.
There's a board game. Wow.
Yeah.
And I think that also looking at those final tasks where the people are all on the same, because then you get to do like five people against themselves, and then like you can rotate people in and out of games, and that way not everybody's like doing it all at the same time. But that's, it might be good fun to have like one thing where everybody has to like go do a task at the same time. But you have to figure out something that everybody can all do. It might be something as simple as like the first person to bring me a paperclip or something.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. You could also set up a task in the other room and then have everybody like take turns going and doing
it. Yeah.
And then come back and share the results. That might be fun.
That's a good idea. I love it. That is such a good idea. And I wish that I had time ever to do fun things like that.
I mean, games are great. And
games are so good.
Games are so good. I do think, you know, it's kind of sad in a way that we've lost the parlor game as much in
what's that? What do you mean by that?
So the there's a lot of board games out there. Mm-hmm. And if you're a board game nerd, you play them and you love them. The parlor game was, originally sort of before the board game era. I think it dates back. I mean, parlor games date back, centuries. But I believe the term parlor game was coined maybe even in the Victorian era.
Okay.
The one I'm thinking of is Scissors, which is a game where a pair of scissors is passed around a circle, and the host will tell you if you're right or wrong, depending on if your scissors are open or closed. And it's a puzzle that the group has to solve.
Uh-huh.
In other words, what is correct or incorrect about holding this pair of scissors a certain way? And spoiler alert, it's that if your legs are crossed and the scissors are open, you are correct. If they are uncrossed, the scissors are closed.
Wow.
You are correct.
Cool.
And
that's great.
Or Mafia, classic parlor game, which has now been, spun out into Werewolf and all these other versions, some of which are card games. Now a reality show, by the way, The Traitors on Peacock is essentially Mafia blown up and done a big mansion. It's fantastic. But what's so great about parlor games is they don't require much of anything.
Right.
A pair of scissors from a desk drawer or nothing for them. A game of Mafia requires nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, sometimes I feel like we turn those things into games you can buy because we feel like a game needs to be, you need to be able to like get it out in order to start playing.
Yes, for sure.
But like, yeah, I mean, my favorite of these is Exquisite Corpse, where it's just paper and pen, and then you like write a sentence, and then you draw the sentence, and then you write what you write a sentence about what was drawn, and it's telephone from text to picture. And then at the end of it, you have no idea where you're going to end up. And it is fun. and it costs nothing.
Nothing. I think it's you're right, Hank. It's capitalism run amok again.
That's probably
because I think big board game doesn't want you playing parlor games.
But big board game shouldn't have that control over me. I should just do what I want to do.
I think it's big Parker Brothers and big Catan. And they're coming for your parlor games, and you can show it to them. You can stick it to them.
Yeah.
But playing something cheap or free.
All right. Let's do one more question before we get to the all-important news from Mars and AFC Wimbledon.
Ibrahim asks, dear Hank and Sam, I just saw a Supernatural episode that was called Death Takes a Holiday, and it got me thinking, was there ever a day when nobody died? Upon further research, Google tells me that there wasn't. But that's with today's population. Yeah, yeah. What are the chances of there existing a day on which nobody died in all human history? Can't stop thinking about death? Ibrahim.
So, like, this is definitely the case for some animals, right? Like, there are some, like, there are days on which no, and it's bad. It's a bad sign. But there's days on which, like, no black rhinos die because there's
you're saying not very because many there's so few of them.
Yeah.
Right. There could be an answer to this question, which is, yes, there will come a day when nobody dies, because we will all have died already.
That will be, yeah, that will be a very bad sign. Yeah.
That's a very funny answer to this question.
You thought that was going to be good, but yeah, it's not.
Turns out, no.
So I looked this up just now. And so we have a fairly good idea that humans went through what's called a population bottleneck at one point, where there was a fairly large self-sustaining population of humans, but then almost everybody died and we very nearly went extinct at some point in our history, like 50,000 to 100,000 years ago, which is not that long. Like, that's well into the existence of humans. So that's a big deal. Human population sharply decreased to between 3,000 and 10,000 surviving individuals. Now, that 3,000 is probably few enough that with average death rate, there would be days with no one dying.
Yes, yes.
Because that's like, 3,000 people is less than, on one day is less than 3,000 days, which is like 10 years of time.
For sure.
Less than 10 years. But we're also talking about a time that's a population bottleneck. And population bottlenecks happen because people are dying a lot.
Right.
I feel like it seems to me unlikely that there was ever a day in human history when no humans died. But if there was, it was right around that time.
It seems like you got to look at the very beginning or the very end.
Yeah.
Of humanity. Like, if we're going to flash forward to a future in which, like, it's really bad out here, mm-hmm. and there's like,
Yeah, when you're the last person left, every day of your life is a day that no people died.
That's right. And if the Guinness Book were around to acknowledge it, you know, it'd be worth celebrating. But unfortunately, it's just you. And maybe if we looked at the very beginning of humanity, that's a little murkier because we're in the process of evolving into humans. And so what are we classifying a human death mm-hmm. versus a proto-human death?
Yeah.
As I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong. Well, I'm not going to say correct me if I'm wrong and then share this statistic because I Googled this just now too. 332,648 people die a day approximately in 2023, but that as more people are born, as the population of the world grows, that number is just going to go up. It's not going to come down. More people means more people dying.
It might. So yes, probably, but also right now, it's not like just number of people dying per day. It's like if they die younger, then more people die per person per year,
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
So back in the day, it was on average, most people didn't see their 25th birthday.
Yeah.
And that average was dragged down mostly by people under the age of five. So that's by back in the day, I mean all of human history until,
yes.
1,000 or 2,000 years ago or for sure. Agriculture. I don't know, something like that. And so that means more deaths per human because they aren't living as many years, which is a weird statistics thing that I hate it. I hate to throw at you because it's also I'm compounding the bummers now.
Yes, sure. Yes.
Yeah.
No, as it makes sense as the world becomes a more difficult place to thrive, one would imagine that the death rate would go up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would guess so. No, let's hope that doesn't happen. So far, we've been pretty good at avoiding that. So let's keep doing whatever that is. But
this
in a good way.
This episode is brought to you by whatever that is.
but better than what we've been that whatever that yes. is. But even better. That, okay,
but more and better.
Right. Well, this week in Mars news, this is cool. So Mars has two moons. Do you know what they are?
Oh, no, I don't.
It's okay. Phobos and Deimos, or whatever, however people pronounce those. And Deimos has a difficult-to-photo side. So because it's tidally locked, so if one side of it always faces Mars, and the orbiters we have going around Mars are inside of that orbit, so it's easy to photograph the close side of the, of that moon, but hard, just like it's the same with us, it's hard, much harder to photograph the far side of the moon. And recently,
Demos is like, please get my good side.
Exactly. So we had until like this week did not have anything like high resolution picture of the far side of Deimos, but now we have it because the United Arab Emirates space probe Hope on March 10th took this photo, and you could see it with also Mars looming in the background. So it was like it's got this big wide orbit that comes in really close. It's like goes out wide and comes in really close, this orbiter does. And it happened to get it like one of its orbits was like as it was going by and it was farther away. It crossed over as Deimos was sitting there and Mars was right in the background. So love that. Love a new moon photo. And
did we see anything unexpected?
No, they can get like more data on what Deimos is made of, which seems to be Mars stuff. Which
that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, there's been a lot of sort of debate over whether they're captured asteroids or something that got flung off of Mars in an event of some
sure.
So that's an ongoing area of debate for the Mars nerds out there.
Mars disject their Mars flotsam and jetsam.
Yeah.
There's what's been tossed overboard and is floating in that big space void.
That big space void. So it seems that Deimos was formed with Mars, at least according to this data, which is, you know, it's big news.
Huh. Sounds to me like it could be a good setting for a space murder.
And then this week in AFC Wimbledon news, AFC Wimbledon are staying up. And not because they did anything great or anything, just because the teams that are worse than them are really bad. So that's all if you follow the podcast, you know what that means. It's good news. But they did just lose over and over again in their last game. They went 1-0 up, which they often do, and then they gave away 5 straight goals to Swindon Town. So they lost that 1-5. Because you can't score the 4th goal if you're AFC Wimbledon. That's how you lose a game. Every single time, apparently. Bummer.
I love these updates. They feel to me like what it would be if you hosted an NPR show and we're taking a break to do news in the middle.
Yeah.
It's like instead of the traffic report, mm-hmm. we get
just a Wimbledon strange soccer team that's just not good at soccer. Yeah. I don't know what they're going to do about this, Sam, but they got to do something. There's got to be a way out of this or not, I guess.
Yeah.
They could just keep playing bad soccer.
Yeah.
It's hard to be a 4th-tier English football team.
Well, this is kind of what it's like to be a Ted Lasso fan right now, too, is to wonder how they're going to turn this around.
Oh, is that happening on the show?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. They're losing big time.
Yeah, but it's narrative. It's a fictional. So they could just write it on the paper and then he scores a bunch of goals. It's easy to turn that around.
It is hard to see from where they are today how they make that make sense in the story.
Oh, interesting.
They are so screwed.
I should watch this show. I have heard good things.
I look forward to it.
Sam Reich, thank you very much for joining me on this episode of Dear Hanging John.
What an absolute treat. Thanks. John, I hope I did you justice.
You're calling me John.
John, I hope you feel well represented.
It was very good. I had a very good time. If you want to send us questions, you can do that at hankandjohn@gmail.com. We don't have a podcast without questions, so thanks for everybody who does that. This podcast is edited by Joseph Tunametich. It's produced by Rosianna Hals-Rojas. Our communications coordinator is Brooke Shotwell. Our editorial assistant is Deboki Chakravarti. The music you're hearing now and at the beginning of the podcast is by the great Gunnarola. And as they say in our hometown,
don't forget to be awesome.